This is the world of Salesforce and Dropbox, HubSpot and Evernote, a world unthinkable without cloud software services. Most businesses and consumers use SaaS every day to get work done. Driven by the internet and ever-expanding availability of bandwidth, SaaS has come to dominate our lives in a very short span of time. But developing a defining service, often ahead of its time, getting users to engage, secure funding, protect IP, and building a truly remarkable and successful SaaS is not an easy task. SaaS Stories brings conversations with the dreamers and visionaries who dared to think ahead. How they built their SaaS, genesis, struggles, trials, tribulations, and eventually success.
Welcome to SaaS Stories. Thank you for your time and for joining us on this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give a shout out to each of you in our next episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Welcome to this exciting new episode of SaaS Stories. Today, we have with us Ravi Trivedi, founder of PushEngage.com, a leading platform for web push notifications globally, which was just sold to Awesome Motive.
PushEngage is the leading web push notification platform serving customers in 150 countries. We are a global player. Last month, we sent around 9 billion web push notifications. So we are well known. We are among the leading players in the space. The problem that we are solving for the customer is I have a site and people come to my site one time, but they don't come back. That's the fundamental problem we are solving, which is an engagement, or you can say it's a re-engagement problem. You can go and check your Google Analytics. Maybe you get 20% repeat visitor or 30 if you're lucky, right? But all you want to do is, because it's very costly to get the first visit, can you get them to come back? The point I will make is, and this we have done a lot of work on with some numbers, is to see that how does web push compare to email? And when you send out an email to 100 people, we saw maybe 5 people or 10 people. Maybe if you're a good mass mailer, 15, 20 people will open. That's like the average MailChimp open rate. On the web push, the same open rate was 50 to 70%.
Ravi Trivedi is founder of PushEngage.com, a leading platform for web push notifications globally with customers in 150 countries. Right before this, he built CouponRunny.com, a leading coupon site in India. Ravi worked at Southeast Interactive Technology Funds, a technology venture capital fund in North Carolina, and as an equity research analyst at Bank of America. He started his career as a software engineer at Hewlett-Packard and later worked as a consultant and a business development manager. He also co-authored the book Web Services Security and participated in creating web services standards. Ravi completed his MBA from Duke University, Fuqua School of Business, and has a master's in computer science from Indian Institute of Science. He is also an angel investor and has made 7 investments so far and exited 2 of them. Now, on to this information-rich episode with Ravi Trivedi. Ravi, welcome to SaaS Stories. I'm so excited to have you here because you are the first complete story of a SaaS start to exit. So I'm really looking forward to this chat. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here. And it's a pleasure to be here.
So before you got to PushEngage, tell us what brought you to PushEngage. How did you come there?
Sure. I'll maybe tell you the brief story. I did an MBA from Duke Fuqua School of Business. This is after working for 6 years in Hewlett-Packard. And post my MBA, I actually switched into Wall Street covering tech stocks. And that got me interested into looking at longer-term investing and so joined a venture fund. As part of that fund, I had a special scenario where they asked me to go in and consult and eventually manage a small P&L of an online division of a larger company. And I started thinking, you know what, I like to be more an operator than an investor. And time came 2011, I said, I had lived for almost 9 years in the US. I wanted to come back home and do a startup. So that's kind of the starting phase. 2011, I came back and started, you know, looking for ideas. In 2012, I built a couponing site called Coupon Rani. That was what was doing very well in e-commerce. I could see there was a huge trend. And that's kind of where we built our first bootstrap product, coupons to save money. And out of that idea actually came Push Engage. So in Coupon Rani, we were bootstrapped but consumer company and looking for new channels all the time. And around 2015, when Chrome announced support for WebPush, we felt it was going to be huge. By within 3 months, we had a product in-house within our company, and we ran and used it, and we saw tremendous, tremendous results. And as a marketer, I knew, just like email marketing, WebPush is going to be huge. And at that time, there were very, very few products out there. And back in the mind, given my investing and other experience, I loved SaaS businesses because recurring, right? Because of the B2C, I was actually every day go out and hunt, you know, your 10,000 or 5,000 orders, whatever it is, right? But in SaaS, you're recurring, you love the revenue. There's like so many things I would have loved to, you know. So then I said, you know what, maybe this is the time for me to make it a product. And we said, okay. And then I kind of moved out of Coupon Rani. Somebody else I gave it to and they run it. And then I kind of launched Push Engage in January 2016. So that's the background of how we started.
Wonderful. So from the point when Google opened up, Chrome opened up the option, and you created this MVP, if I may say.
Sure.
And then deciding that, yes, I should go and actually make it as a standalone venture. What is the timeline and what happened in your mind?
So the first version for in-house was ready in July. April 2015 is when Chrome announced that. We observed it in June. By July, we had the internal in-house product. And then from August, we started working. And around December 25th, actually, we did a soft launch. And I would say open to market for selling from first. So it's like, I would say 5 months. But remember, very lean. I had only one developer from my team working on it.
Wow.
Only one. Yeah. So, yeah.
Wonderful. So, yeah. So before we now get into the details of the story, explain a little bit for the audience how you just compared Push Engage or Web Push to email marketing.
Sure.
So explain a bit how does this work, and according to you, sure, how is it similar?
Yeah, so let me maybe give a 1 minute intro of what Push Engage is, right?
Yeah.
So Push Engage is a leading web push notification platform serving customers in 150 countries. We are a global player. Last month, we sent around 9 billion web push notifications. So we are well known. We are among the leading players in the space. Now, coming to your question on web push versus email. So like I said, the problem that we are solving for the customer is I have a site and people come to my site one time, but they don't come back. That's the fundamental problem we are solving, which is an engagement, or you can say it's a re-engagement problem, meaning I have a one-time visitor. So you can go and check your Google Analytics. Maybe you get 20% repeat visitor or 30 if you're lucky, right? But all you want to do is, because it's very costly to get the first visit, can you get them to come back? And now when you start going deeper into that, or which is also called the retention, you'll see what are the channels. You got email marketing, you got web push, you got SMS messaging, or if you have some money, you will spend some advertising on a retargeting, which is also geared towards the same. So the point I will make is, and this we have done a lot of work on with some numbers, is to see that how does web push compare to email? And for me, the biggest thing was when we saw the numbers, what were we looking for? When you send out an email to 100 people, we saw maybe 5 people or 10 people. Maybe if you're a good mass mailer, 15, 20 people will open. That's like the average MailChimp open rate. On the web push, the same open rate was 50 to 70%, meaning you send a message, 50 to 70% people saw. And why was that? Because you guaranteed somebody seeing a message as long as they're online and the browser is open, right? And the second thing is that resulted in much higher clicks. So maybe on the mail, you were seeing 3 clicks for every 100 people, here you were seeing 30. And so it very quickly became evident to us at the same subscriber base, you can do in a conservative way 5 times to 10 times better than email in terms of, I guess, the clicks, and which in turn resulted in conversions or maybe higher page views, depending on what your metric was, that this channel will become integral to everybody's part. Like, the question is, it's not going to fully replace anything. It's like another thing that you will do, because we don't claim to, because there are certain use cases where email is best, right? You have a long form, you're sending a detailed order, perfect. But you got an alert for a flash sale, you got a payment reminder, you want, let's say, a price alert, prices drop. Those are perfect for this channel. So,
great. Do you see that because of this notification blockers that have come in later, did you see any change in this success rate of getting through?
So it's a great question. This also, I must say, one of the other things which I hear and I heard even in the early days was like, hey man, this is all good, but you know what? I don't always accept when I see that pop-up, right? I will tell you our data proofs otherwise, and I'll go maybe a little deeper. Why is that? So number one, I personally feel I am maybe that generation which probably is less likely to accept. That's the first point. Because I see my son, he's an avid gamer. He does everything on notifications. Everything from his school, it's all notification driven. That's number one. And the way to think about is, you don't go to the website. The website comes to you and tells you. So it has to have that convenience. So I'll give you another example. Let's say I'm booking a ticket. I'm looking for this Jagjit Singh concert and I want the best seats. And I want you to tell me the moment the concert booking opens, because that's the thing. Now, I don't want to check the site 10 times. Now, if I told you I will send you that alert, you will absolutely say yes. If I told you I'm looking for this flight ticket to Delhi or, I don't know, maybe New York, maybe not now, maybe after COVID, but then send me alert when it's below this price. Now, the point I'm making is, this is, again, just a broader point.
Sure.
Yes, there are folks who say, yeah, but that's because some marketers are just sending everything to everybody. And we'll go deeper maybe into this, how to send the right one. But the point here is, when you bring value to the customer, they just want it. And to answer a very specific question, we were seeing, and we are a heavily optimized platform, and we actually first care about the subscription, because that's where the journey starts, which is where, by the way, we see many other players in the industry don't understand that that's so important. If you want a customer to get ROI, they got to get them right customers and enough. And we see 20% opt-in rates. I mean, I must tell you that you may not believe, but that's the number we have, because we track it. We have what we call as opt-in analytics. Again, one of the only players to have that. I'm surprised why more people don't build it, but we capture how many times we showed you that pop-up and how many people clipped accept. And we are seeing on an optimized floor 20, but on a lower end, say 10%. So 10 to 20% is huge, because on an email side, maybe 2 to 5%.
Absolutely.
But you know, the next question to us, why is that? I'll tell you why. Single click, subscribe. What more you want? Second thing, contrary to the popular belief, you can unsubscribe from WebPush from your browser setting. You don't have to go and beg to the provider, hey, please remove me from my email list. It's your personal setting. Single click and off. So the point I'm making is full control of your permissions, single click, and so you get good subscription rates.
Fantastic. This is great insight, because we don't talk about this often enough. I mean, you take notifications as something which has organically happened, like many other things, like you got, you know, browser extensions and so on and so forth. Notification happened at some point and you started getting those. But how to leverage it, how to understand how it works. I will come back. I'll circle back to this later and I'll talk to you about how it works for B2B. I mean, B2C, I can understand.
Sure.
And in B2B, I imagine it will be more for SaaS products, but I'll still come back there, and I would like to know, because you have a huge depth of knowledge in this. So let's go back to January of 2016, and let's start from there. So you decided that we'll launch PushEngage as a standalone product, and you said you are ready. You have one developer with you. What happens next?
Yeah. So we launched the product and right there, we see there's good demand. Also, remember, the B2C world taught us something about marketing. I never think I am like the top tier marketer, but I always think I'm above average, right? Globally, okay, not India or whatever. And that brought us the insights to drive inbound sales. Even till date, 98% of my sale is inbound, 100% inbound at one point. So we knew what to do to get customers in. So from day one, we didn't have issue. We kept on refining our product. At some stage, what happened was, and this is an interesting part in our journey, and I do share about it in some, like after around a year or so, we started seeing we had so much subscriber count so much load that our MVP kind of a model that was basically built on, again, for the maybe little technical folks, built on like a MySQL kind of a database, wasn't scaling, and we needed to kind of move to a NoSQL kind of a database. In that time, we said there was a lot of server pressure. We were on AWS, so we kept on scaling. But then we said, no, we got to redo it because we really can't scale up. So that was actually a crucial time in our journey. So I think the first MVP, yeah, it had its own set of challenges, bugs. Of course, then I added more people. By January, we had 3 people. And I think at the end of that year, maybe 6-7 people working on it because we knew that it was directionally right. And we would, you know, do well if we continue to build. The early mover did give us good traffic, but around January of 2017 or February, we started looking at, we got a revamp. That was the big thing that happened in our journey, just to move forward. We said we need to redo the whole architecture for scale. Now, that is where, you know, we didn't have capacity to hire because meaning, see, I was bootstrapping. There was some money I had. Of course, I do put for every startup I build, I say, okay, I'll put 50 lakhs or maybe for the US audience, maybe $70,000 to $100,000 per startup is what I'm willing to put. But with that, you know, you may not get this. So we said, okay, what should I do? So I reached out to some of my old friends. I forgot to tell you, I was also a techie, right? I studied at Indian Institute of Science and I've written code. I've written open source. I've also written a book in technology. So I kind of dug deep and kind of became more hands-on aware on servers, etc. But then reached out to my friends and asked them, hey, can you consult? And then we, incidentally, what happened, we did a hackathon for backend engineer. And we found an amazing guy. He didn't want to move out of where he was. He just came for the heck of it. And we asked him, hey, will you consult? And then he and my friend, and we did the, and it took like 5-6 months, but then we did a redo of the architecture. And that was a big moment for us because from then on, that underlying layer was built right. And then all my engineers and all of us were able to build on top of it. And that's why we were able to scale. And I can tell you one of the things that we see in this industry, this is not a classic SaaS. It's what I call as an infra SaaS, infrastructure SaaS company. And you need to have this capability to scale, load your site very fast. Some of those things just like table stakes. And we were able to do it with that rewrite. And I'm very glad that I had the set of folks who worked on it. And that's the reason why we were able to, you know, come so far.
Wonderful. So now in the journey, you are middle of 2017, you have rewritten the code,
right.
You have a new architecture,
right.
You have gone through the motions to ensure now you're ready to scale. So did you decide to continue with AWS or did you also consider moving out of AWS?
No, we continue. We are still today on AWS.
Okay.
Right? And the benefit for that, just for the record, is like you can move out, but then you need like 2-3 specialized engineers to do bare bones. And we felt the time is of essence. And yes, maybe AWS at times can seem pricey, but it was easy enough for most of the developers to use. And it's better to fight the external battle than look at something else because this isn't the time. I'm in the market trying to drive as much market share rather than worry. I mean, of course, if I was like a pure technical or I had like a pure CTO, maybe that could have made sense. But I was just outward focused at that point. Yeah, so we started building towards scale. Yeah.
So talking of market share, where would you place PushEngage and who are the major players here, you say?
So I'll maybe go back to maybe go deeper into the question you were asking, which is at this stage, we started looking at aggressively onboarding even larger customers. See, in the past also we had, but without sleepless nights. Yeah, and we kind of also got some good word of mouth. So there are some good stuff we did, which got us good word of mouth. We saw this powered by PushEngage work very well. Like, you know, in the Hotmail era, you would have seen that just worked very well. And it just got us a lot of customers. But one of the things we saw some interesting insight was, let's say a market leader or a big player in an industry adopts us. The moment they would just put that pixel and that pop-up will come, people will know these guys are using PushEngage. Within next 3 days, all their competitors would sign up to at least try our product. And so that was kind of the thing. And so we did come up with some more interesting stuff. Very good rapid growth era. I enjoyed it a lot. In terms of the market share, I guess it's often very hard to answer that question. People have done, you know, whether it's built with or some other tools, what people do is they say, okay, there are 2 ways of measuring market share. I can give you an example, being a scientist, partly, I guess. You take 100 sites, and see how many of them have web push. And then of those who have web push, let's say there are 20 out of them, which is where I think the market is. So there is still a huge upside left. And then of those 20, how many are using, say, one signal? How many are using Push Crew? How many are using iZooto? How many are using Push Engage? I mean, these are some of the players, right? And some of them, incidentally, a lot of them actually happen to be from India as well. And there are some more, right? And then what's the share? So you will get some market. There is a data out there. I won't kind of comment, but like we think we're among the top 3 or 5. It's like a little hard, but then the answer there, what you're not getting is this is share based on the sites. But a site like, let's say I am powering Times Now, that's one site. But that one site is equal to, you know, how many? So that's the other side to it, I guess, which is harder to say market share by the revenue. But I will leave it at saying we are among the top 5, definitely. And if you are any large vendor looking for this solution through an RFP or some of this process or whichever, right, process, we usually get invited majority of the times is what I look at.
Great. Also, maybe one of the metrics that we could potentially look at is the number of push notifications that have been sent out. Like, sure, you said, you sent out 9 billion. Yeah, so if we can have some comparable data there, that might indicate a better way of what is the usage and what's really going on.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't always share that, right? But that's true.
I understand.
I mean, the other one is to see, look at, actually, we do track. This is like how many subscribers I have in my database. Although I won't be able to share that, but that's kind of what we look at. Sure. Internally, like, okay, how many subscribers I have in my database active?
So let's go back there. I mean, you have the new architecture now. At this point, how many companies are already using Push Engage?
So in terms of signups, we were always getting rapid. I won't know exact, but if I were to hazard, we probably had like 10,000, 15,000 signups already by that time.
Yes.
And so we have historically averaged. I mean, yeah, so that's kind of what would happen. And then from there, it just zoomed and we just kept on getting a lot of signups, right? Now, the thing is, of course, signups are signups.
Yeah.
So a lot of people will just be trying. Again, I'll have to look at old numbers for how many were actually actively using. But I will say there was a ton of there. I mean, if I was maybe hazard a guess, maybe I was still sending 500,000 push notifications a month if I were to just use that metric.
Sure. So my question here is that how many of these were your paying customers out of this 10 or 15,000?
So I think that's again a number which I don't want to kind of talk much about for a variety of reasons. Like, I would say the average SaaS conversion is between 2 to 5%.
Right.
And we were well within that.
Okay.
That's kind of where we'll leave it.
Yeah.
But what we also saw was what's interesting and which what I can share is that we saw a very large customers adopt as well. So while it'll count as one conversion, but that's different. So this is why I want to break up, right? So we have seen with some tremendous conversion, some very large sites trust us. And it was good, right? I mean, from a price perspective, we are very competitive, I think, then and now. And I think that helped us also.
So Ravi, one quick side question here, sidebar. Like you said, there are large companies adapting.
Yes.
And typical sense of SaaS is that when you're selling to SMBs or you're selling to MSMEs, that process is significantly different from when you're selling to enterprise.
Correct.
Enterprise is still literally the ones you're talking about, the large organizations. So what was your experience in selling? Were they coming to you asking for a demo, or was it something that you were initiating? How was that going? Yeah.
So like I said earlier, inbound, almost 100%, always. 100%, always, right? We did not believe in outbound. I mean, it's just maybe my preference also, because what happens is the moment you have an inbound lead, it's a warm lead. They already know your brand. And again, it's probably a matter of, can I afford it? Let's put it this way, right? Like if tomorrow I did something and I can't get enough inbound, then I'll do outbound. I'm not saying it's not, right? And it's like a different ball game there. But I was able to get enough inbound through some of the marketing hacks or growth hacks we were doing. And we loved it because when an inbound customer comes, it's just much easier. They're already warm, easier to demo. So even if we like we got Reliance Ajio. So all inbound. And so then one thing we thought was, okay, why is that these people are coming? And one of the common things in which, again, get asked is like in the enterprise space also, there are two types of, I guess, buyers or marketers who buy our product. One who are very enterprising, who are always looking for the newer product. So absolutely the early days and even today, most of the buyers who are coming inbound are the people who are probably more, at least in the early days, were those who were early adopters. And they're willing to try out three or four products. They may not be looking for a very big brand name because there is none in this space, or like IBM or Adobe kind of stuff. But they're willing to look at, okay, these guys have good customer. And so that kind of also played a role into that. And those are the kind of people I think we kind of got a lot of. And then it just through word of mouth. See, the bigger thing which I'm proud of is like, we were able to deliver to those people. We have had extremely, extremely low churn on those enterprise customers in all of our journey because, A, we were able to take care of their needs, their scale, given the infra that we had built, that they were very happy. And the ROI was anyway humongous that we knew. And then we built, like, a lot of our roadmap was built to some extent by a lot of these large customers. But they were very savvy. They were not like, I guess, those folks who probably, I mean, they were like at the forefront of knowing and thinking about what they needed. And that kind of helped us too.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So that let's dive into your inbound strategy. I mean, because yes, because you are obviously very fond of it.
Sure.
And you obviously know a lot. I mean, because sure, your entire strategy was built around that. So let's talk about from the beginning, what kind of inbound strategies did you adopt? Why did you adopt them and what worked and what didn't?
So we'll begin with number one, the powered by Push Engage, which I was talking about. So we made sure if you're on a free plan, you had that powered by, so that when people saw the pop-up, they knew whose pop-up it was. Second thing is, this is a subtle one. This still gets used by other folks also. When you send out a notification, you remember you see those UTM parameters, which you use in Google Analytics for tracking.
Right.
It'll say UTM, blah, blah, blah. It'll one of them or few of them default to Push Engage. So when a notification, let's say, gets sent out by a very large business, guess what? All their subscribers know the notification had something to do with this thing called Push Engage. They may not know who that is. Maybe they'll search and see who that is. But they know there's a notification which came to me and it had something called Push Engage in the UTM. Some people observe that, right? Especially if you're a marketer, you'll immediately get it, right? And so that was a like related. But again, not to say the other people didn't benefit it. Others also probably doing. But this definitely, right? Outside that, I think the base level of SEO, search engine optimization always, base level of content marketing. I keep using the word base because I think we did average plus. It was not like resounding, but yeah, we did reasonably enough. So we also wanted to share what we learned. And we have ton of data. What is the data? So I'll give you examples. When you think of inbound and other stuff, it's not writing focused article only on keyword. It's like genuine insights. So if I see, let's say, 10,000 sites using my product, and out of them, 2,000 are in one industry, I can aggregate anonymous data and share that. That made the basis for our benchmark reports. Till date, I haven't seen anybody else do a benchmark in web push. You can check our report. So I can say in e-commerce sites in US, in Europe, in Asia, these are the benchmarks. What are the benchmarks? What is the opt-in rate? What's the click rate? Conversion rate, blah, blah, blah. So you can see all of it. So that to me is an original content that I think helps a lot. Similarly, we also wrote a little bit on the playbooks. Like, okay, if I am an e-commerce site and I know this is a news channel, I don't know what to do because it's not like email. Can you help me? So we said, okay, e-commerce sites, based on what we have seen, number one campaign is cart abandonment. Make sure you run that automation. It's an automated campaign. It's fully personalized for a user based on what they do. So like that, we made some mini playbooks, some published on the blog, some to people who came on in, and that actually also helped a lot. So I think content marketing is a third one. Then, of course, some amount of paid advertising, defensive and otherwise. Then the other one I must mention is affiliates and partnerships, right? So I personally built some relationships with actually some of the affiliates. And later part of the story, when we talk about exit, it'll actually play a big role. And I must mention one of the affiliate, Harsh Agrawal. He's one of the top affiliates in India. He runs a blog called Shout Me Loud. He's the most read in the WordPress space. If you're a blogger wanting to start a blog, he himself gets between 2 to 5 million visits, okay? You can check it out. And he has his earnings report openly written last few years. I mean, in some months, he has openly said he made $60,000, $80,000, like something that even a SaaS company would aspire to do, right? But why I share that is he's that league, right? And early on, for example, I built a good relationship with him because I knew, and this is from our past affiliate experience, is the top 5% of the affiliates drive 95% value. So I said, coming from that ecosystem, I need to build relationships. So there are 2-3 affiliates I built good relation. He was one of them. It proved to be very valuable. He helped us, you know. We gave him the product. He liked it. He kept on giving feedback. And then that was good. That was the other thing I was going to say. Incidentally, what's interesting sidebar there is he was the one who introduced me to Syed, who runs Awesome Motive, the group who actually bought us out this just a few months back. But he introduced in 2017. So yeah, that's just the interesting part. You know.
Of course, so. Of course. It's time for a short break. Affiliate marketing is a key growth engine for SaaS. And I asked Ravi if building an affiliate program was a strategy by design. We will come back and hear how that worked out for PushEngage. Stay with us.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for SaaS Stories and founder of PitchLink. Right before the break, Ravi was explaining his marketing strategy, which was focused on content marketing. Then he spoke about the role Harsh Agarwal, founder of Shout Me Loud and CoinSutra, played, and the affiliate marketing strategy Ravi deployed. Let us hear how that worked out for PushEngage. So this affiliate, building the affiliate program and actually getting influential affiliates in, was that a conscious decision? Was that something you knew from day one that you were going to go after that?
Because I was an affiliate myself as Coupon Site, Coupon Rani, remember?
Right.
So this is one of the other things that some of the biases, I can talk about biases founders have. One is affiliate doesn't work, may not work, too hard to work. But given where we came from, we knew it will be. It's hard. I can tell you it's hard if you don't crack the right thing. This other bias which I will just add on is like people think paid doesn't work, paid marketing is not good, and people want to take the hero attitude or whatever. I'm using a broad word here, but it's like that approach saying, yeah, I used $0 for acquisition. Guess what? You left a lot of stuff on the table. It's not like it doesn't make any difference if you use dollars or not. What matters is, if you were worried about a profitable growth or you were worried about growth at all costs. So there are many models there. You can pick your lever, but if you're doing zero advertising, I'm 100% telling you're leaving enough on the table. Plus, you're letting people occupy your brand name out there on the channels. And so the point is, this was the other experience I learned from my affiliate world. Like, you always have to have a defensive campaign in the paid side, and it just base level is always needed. And from day one, we did it. I mean, from day one, even if I had 3 engineers, there was some base level of that. Because the other thing is, once you build the product, you want people to use it. Yeah. I'm not build it. I have a huge opportunity cost of my time. You see, I'm anyway old. That's also increases the opportunity cost. But it's like, you can't sit tight. Even if I have to pay to get customer, I will do it because it's much important for them to use. And this is where I've seen some people make the classic ones. So I wanted to share 2 of them.
That's great, because this is a term I have not heard before. And I've been talking to a lot, of course, I mean, doesn't mean I know, defensive campaign. Talk about it a bit.
So defensive search campaign is when your brand is being bid on. I mean, this again riles some people. It's like a sensitive topic, but I'll just put it up. So basically, you Google the word PushEngage and see how many people are bidding on my keyword. Why is that? A, of course, one good happy thing is, hey, our brand is big. Okay, that's, some people told me, but that's good. But the bad part is I got competitors bidding on my brand. So that's what I call as a defensive campaign. Okay. And what it means is I absolutely have to have one position in that bid, because there are some people who are going away to my competitors when they're searching for my product. I need to have one of my links. So that's what I mean by a defensive campaign.
Okay. Right? So from there, let's sort of talk a bit about your paid campaign. So what was your objective? How did you budget it? How did you scale that budget? What really happened and what channels did you use?
Sure. So on the paid side, we love AdWords. AdWords often brings very targeted, and there are some other channels too. But largely search-based channels where I can measure cost per lead. And then eventually from conversion data, I can measure cost per acquisition. And then eventually return on advertising. I think the hard part in advertising is, can you build an end-to-end ROI system? Or meaning, can you measure that if you're spending $100, accurately, how much are you making out of it?
Yeah.
Maybe in 3 months. So that's one part. I won't claim that we got it like fully, but directionally we knew, and it kind of helped. And then the defensive stuff, we had to be there like to some extent. But
yeah.
But that's kind of where we knew like, okay, that we needed some. But that was never actually the dominant part, by the way. Like, because the powered by or the organic and the word of mouth, I mean, this was still the dominant form. And it still is, right? But this was interesting secondary, like affiliate and paid were interesting secondary channels for us. But the content marketing based SEO, direct traffic for the brand, still and always, I mean, till date has been the majority for us. So
if I may ask a little bit, what kind of ROI did you see for your paid campaigns? I mean, what was your cost of acquisition? Where did you land up?
So can't share much, again, due to, I guess, the competitive nature. But our cost of acquisition was really, really low is what I can say. And within like 2 months, we'd be able to recover our cost or even less. It was kind of a no-brainer to just keep putting more because your recovery was kind of so quick is what I'll say.
Right.
So, but we were very targeted in our campaigns, what I will also say early on. But again, I don't want us to kind of take away that paid was driving at that point, and even today, not that I'm against paid, okay? In some markets, paid is the dominant, but in this one, it wasn't, and it isn't, is my opinion. But the other channels were doing really well. So, for example, like affiliate, great example. WordPress market or some of those places, if you get a great endorsement. And this is not like we always believed in the other part, which is the product has to stand for itself, right? And this, again, I know it's very cliched, but what do I mean by that? Like, I have all these customers who are coming. By the way, even today, 90-95% is outside India, right? What it means is it actually has to be do-it-yourself. It's not like the classic, hey, get on a phone and get the install done. No, not at all. So it should be full do-it-yourself. And we never had so many support engineers that it has to have fewer bugs reported. Now, those are focus areas. And whenever we found a bug, we tried to, fix it in like real time. Even till today, that's the ethos we follow, which is any real time customer bug is the highest priority. And I have now a separate set of folks who look at it. But that was also what got us, good product, and that word of mouth going for us is what I want to say, because that was equally important. Let's say you get 100 people, whether organic or through referrals or somebody said, but you got to retain and get that word of mouth going. So that flywheel that we talk about start working. So I think that is what caused it to, work well for us, the product side.
Got it. So you're basically, I'm just to circle this and move away. Your typical business account is like $25 a month. Your premium account is $50 a month. So I'm imagining, just derivative, that you are, for a business account acquisition, you are spending about $50, and for the premium about $100 from that 2 month payback point.
No, actually much lower, but that's fine.
Okay, that's
great.
Great. Great. No, I just wanted that. I just wanted to know.
My ads have a quality score of 9 on 10 and 10 on 10. So, by the way, I was an AdWords guy myself long back. So, yeah, but that's but that's just not the average still, right?
Sure.
Because we do have enterprise as well. But again, I can't talk about the numbers there specifically, but high level, what you're saying is not a bad number to shoot for if somebody is trying to get
absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But what do we exceed in that because we're very targeted.
Wonderful. So my next,
if you go deeper, why is that? It also depends on your landing pages and the targeting. I mean, there's a ton of stuff that happens. It's like almost a special subject in itself.
Correct.
And if you can do well, and I know a lot of the venture funded companies leverage it a lot more, but we do our bit. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, let us talk a bit about the B2B scenario vis-a-vis push engagement.
Sure, sure.
So, because a lot of the examples are, and obviously it makes immense sense when you're talking B2C, but how did you see this, and what percentage of your customers are today B2B customers, and what's playing out there?
Sure. So, I think, to be honest, yes, you're right, B2B fewer, but there are cases, I can tell you. So, the way we talk about it, like, wherever you're reading email, newsletters, there is an opportunity. For example, I'll tell you, let's say I'm an IT services company, and I'm a potential, let's say, oil and gas industry. I come and read a case study on oil and gas industry on your services company. The next time you put a case study, send me an alert, because I don't know, maybe you'll send me an email, but better you send me an alert, hey, a case study is available, come and download, right? Number one use case. Number two, most of the B2B guys are still doing lead gen, remember?
Yeah.
I'm very tempted to actually now show you the slide we talked to our B2B customers on. We work across the layers, like starting from pre-sales to sales to all those. Everywhere alerts are needed. So if you're doing a lead gen, one of the common problems you have is you have a form and you fill and you go away. Now, one of the common things is you have an email field. What if somebody came, didn't fill the email and went away? You can't do anything. You can't do retargeting, nothing, right? So in the case of web push, let's say they gave a consent before, and which 20% people are, then we can nudge them to say, hey, come back. You started the form. You came here. Come and fill it back. This is called the form abandon. This is the second campaign I have for B2B, right? Again, if you gave me a very specific vertical, I could even tell you more campaigns. But those are kind of those two broad that work well. Case study or blog alerts, followed by any form abandonment for B2B.
Yeah, so it's sort of a cart abandonment equivalent.
Exactly. Yeah, but right. They love it because their leads are worth a lot. I mean, that one lead could be $500,000 deal. Yeah. I mean, and so they don't mind paying, even if they're paying $10,000, $20,000. It's just peanuts. They just will pay that, right? Because they're very valuable customer.
Right. Any vertical-oriented ideas you can share in terms of B2B?
Sir. Absolutely. Okay, B2B, you're saying. See, B2C, I can go. See, let's cover the basics. Number one, e-commerce, absolutely no-brainer. Cart abandonment, number one. Price alerts, number two. Browse abandonment. What is browse abandonment? I like product, like the t-shirt. I came few times, I didn't. So those are the few top ones in the flash sale. This is the e-commerce, obvious one, but really big. The inventory alert, probably not everybody gets it, but that's huge. And also price alert, those are also huge. Now, publishers, news sites, content site, newspaper. By the way, we power a ton of newspapers across the globe, top newspapers. Breaking news for your section, right? Whether it's sports or politics, huge use cases there, right? To drive the page views, right? Because that's the perfect one, right? Then travel, huge segment. Again, there, you know, you started booking a hotel, you didn't complete a booking. Again, an interesting campaign there. Looking for price drops, perfect example there. Let's say when you are in the travel, you can do a cross-sell, upsell, because I know as an airline that you are now in this city between this day and this day. So ton of campaigns. And again, we have ton of customers in all these sectors, which I said large, large customers, right? Now, coming to B2B, like I said, one is IT services, which I kind of shared off on a case study and a lead gen side. We have had some unusual B2B also, but mostly on the lead gen side. Or maybe, let's say, admissions, universities, right? Like admission. Right now in India, there's so many admissions happening, right? There again, it's like the classic people, students are filling the form and submitting, right? And I'm able to either, if I'm a site which has many colleges, then I'm able to send people to university one versus two or three, where I'm converting into leads or to do the form abandon, is what I'll say, right? And then there's a ton of like cross-sell that happens. Like some of these people who are into monetization, affiliates, again, it's not a B2B per se, but again, close to B2C, but they're then, affiliates are then looking to cross-sell. Okay, I have a customer with this profile, I can sell them an insurance product and a lead basis, et cetera, et cetera. So those are other use cases,
right?
But direct selling there is what I'll say.
Right.
So the other one more I must say, is this around, say, education. Again, it's not B2B, but it's kind of. It's like I have a student, I come to a portal and I'm doing this course. The biggest problem of this portal or most portals is like they start the course, but they don't complete. So you can send very targeted, hey, you were on the lesson one, come back and finish it. Okay, lesson one is done. Oh, you got this badge, come back and do lesson two. So the course completion becomes a huge. So again, I can go on and on. You just have to give me a vertical is what I'll say.
Right. That's interesting. I'm sure very similar things can happen with real estate.
Heavy usage. They're already using heavily. Real estate guys who are launching a product, almost always, invariably, they also have a chatbot, but they also have push. You would see it, right? Absolutely. Right.
Quick question. How much was your inbound cost versus how much were you spending on your outbound PPC kind of thing?
So I think the content cost was more around the people and our activity. And I would say, because it's people and all, maybe it's kind of comparable because we never spend a lot on the PPC side. So it was kind of comparable.
Okay.
But it was driving a little higher, this thing.
And any number you can share?
No, unfortunately not. That's the.
Give me a thumb rule. I don't want specifics. So where are you spending like $100,000 a year or $20,000 a year?
Maybe around that $20,000-$40,000 a year. Yeah.
In both PPC and in the inbound content piece.
Yeah.
So total it would be around $70,000-$100,000 put together.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Cool. And would you be able to share what is your current revenue?
No, I can't share. Unfortunately, with all this exit and all.
No, that's all right.
There are numbers out there in many sites. You can research. But what I can share is we definitely crossed the 1 million mark. Hmm. It's out there also because we attended some of those events which are meant only for that. So that much I can share. Maybe not be a big news for you.
No, I wanted to know. I want to know that.
I wish I can. But yeah.
Okay. So let's get to this. You got introduced to Saeed in 2017 and you have been talking to him. And this introduction came from Harsh, who was your affiliate. Yes. And your friend, you have been sort of talking to him and he has been giving you feedback and he did a turn and you have been talking to Saeed. And how did this come about in 2020 amidst COVID and all of this?
No, it's an interesting story. I'll first begin. I still believe it's a lot of it is God's grace or lot of these things which we call as luck or it's just divine. This thing is what I do believe. Okay. Because that's the only way it happens. See, I always felt that it was 7.5 years. I could take a little bit of a break, bootstrap as a sole founder. And I was also looking for, is there more I can do towards society? I mean, that was an internal change that happened at this age. And can I do something more along this line? And so I was open to exploring this idea. And then what happened was, it so happened. And I think Saeed also wrote on his blog that in July, they made a call that this is a space they absolutely have to get in. I mean, 2017, we talked, but we were also young. They were just figuring out. So we didn't we were in touch. But then in 2020, when they said, no, we will be definitely entering the space, they had, that means committed dollars towards it. And when they were starting to build, almost around the same time, there's a friend, Andrew, who I was taking help. He runs a site called Micro Acquire. Okay, so this is a story. I think it's out there as well. We said, hey, he has a zero fee and you can put your company there and see. I said, let's see what's the market reception. Okay, and he put it there and he sent out an email to some guys. And incidentally, Saeed was in that. And I hey, Saeed, we remember our chat. So anyway, there were some more people who showed interest. But then, given Saeed was a marketer, there were so many things we were looking for in this. He's an amazing person, by the way. I learned a ton, right, in the times I've interacted since, say, this year, June, July onwards. He's 30 years. He just turned 30 in October. I'm just enamored by how much he has done in this. And I'm not just saying because I sold my company, but he's just an amazing marketer. 30 years, 11 brand under his bootstrap. Very business savvy, very good marketer and a product guy. I'm just amazed how he manages so many brands, and he still has that delegation, that model that is working for me. I haven't talked about my kind of failures or per se, or I felt that, scaling up is hard, right? I was making the transition into the next level to delegate and go to the next. So I felt it was amazing fit for what we were doing. And I didn't want to sell to somebody who didn't value us less, meaning to somebody, say a financial, who will say, hey, what's the cost, what's the margin? Or even strategic, for example, even a large marketing tech company approached us. Companies in US, companies in other parts of the world, large companies, right? We'll just get lost in it, is what I felt. And in this case, standalone brand, well-valued, well part of that umbrella, marketer, and we said, yeah, that's a good fit, and you want to build it, we already have it, let's, instead of doing from scratch, just take it further. And that's kind of it all happened.
And how long did it take from start to finish from this mail that went out from
July? Yeah. So I think I will say July till September and or October. So that's kind of
pretty fast. So is this an all cash deal?
I can't talk. I mean, I'm not supposed to talk of anything on the deals. I'll not talk much on it. But you can find more information on what typically such a deal site. So this isn't like, I guess, the classic Facebook style deal. No way it is. I'm just telling for those who are listening. But as a single founder, yeah, it's good to get validation that what you build is respected. But Syed also likes to keep the deal and many stuff simple. And so it was a simple deal. Again, being a VC, I've been on the other side selling companies, much larger ones though. Mm. And I can tell you all those things. I mean, this one I can tell you, I do not like earnouts and do not like things which are conditional on the future too much. Because after this, or like after such an stuff, if you're not in the driving seat, then you can't control those outcomes. And then it's always leads to these differences. And
yeah.
I'm just being very kind. So I would rather, put it this way, keep it simple. And it's like in the market, there's always this thing, you may know, right? Venture valuations are like non-cash valuations. Cash valuations are different. And so there is something like that. So the thing is keeping it simple. And so this I liked as well, right? It just saves me time and him as well. And yeah, so right. it was pretty efficient is what I'll say. I was, to be very honest, if I told you, I was very surprised. I was expecting like so much diligence, although we were very buttoned up. I mean, it's also my style, my team will say, not to boast, but like when I go deep, I really prepare well. Like, so when we knew this was happening, we had prepared. But like, they didn't look at so much the diligence stuff. It's just... They knew the stuff. That's the beauty, right? If you're a marketer, you know the stuff. You don't have to, like a financial guy, look at everything. So that's why it was pretty fast as well, right? And they have seen the place and they know that in the market, what's our reputation. They probably, I was surprised he read so many of our reviews and what our customers said. And I have to tell you this, the other big thing, which we didn't talk about differentiators, the customer success or customers, why the customer loved us was the white glove service that we were giving them. Even though they may be 29, we didn't care about what dollar they gave, but to think from a customer perspective and to kind of help them was what we were doing, is what I'll say.
So two quick questions. One is that how large is your customer success or customer support team?
Right now we are like 5-6 people.
Okay,
it's
cool.
Huge. But with that, we were able to handle so many, I mean, even now.
Right. That's amazing. And the next question is, I obviously presume you didn't have any external investor in this at this point.
No, we never took any investment. Although I got ton of inbound for interest given house, but I kind of, this was also conscious choice. If I were to raise money, I had to be in it for 10 years kind of stuff.
Right.
And I was like, so that was one other thing. The other is like, I was conservative. Plus after a stage, I'll tell you the other part. I felt the moment I'm a single founder, I go on the road, and take investment, I lose so much time. I'm like, I'm better off instead of raising, let's say, $2 million, I may maybe raise quarter of it through customer cash flow. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I was like, I don't know. I mean, I can't just see this customer going off versus, you know, me going to, and I felt, I mean, why, but we were at a stage where we said, yeah, now we have a good roadmap. We have a good base. We were looking to, you know, think of that. And this is where this stuff works because they are a larger group and they can deploy a lot more capital, which is the other part of the thesis. That will grow more rapidly now in some of the things, next level things, they can do much better. But that's where, you know, this makes it an interesting point. And yeah.
Great. So Ravi, what's on the cards now? Long sabbatical, writing a new book. What is it that you are planning to do?
All of the above. Okay, so I'll begin by saying I intend to take a short few month break. I do read and I do write. So maybe there is something on that. In the past, I've also written a book, like I said. I've been reading a lot more on spirituality. I'm a Vedanta or non-dualistic student, I must say. I actually have a deep interest in philosophy. Last 4 or 5 years, I've studied, you know, many philosophies and religions of the world. That helps me refine my thinking. And that's one area. But there's another area which is very passionate. I must mention I've been looking at meditation apps, and there is an app that I'm really passionate about called Black Lotus. This is done by a person I follow a lot called Om Swami. He has an amazing story. I would encourage you to go check it out. Like he was a software guy, software business, sold it and became a monk. You should read his story. And he basically meditated a lot, and he actually reached that stage. And then he's just sharing that through his app. So I volunteer for that app, and I hope I can do a little more on that. That's one of the things but it's still not final. I mean, that's things like those appeal to me because I feel as a startup founder or as anybody, we all are in so much rush that we need that calm and that thing. And then if I can help through this, whatever work I do there or elsewhere, whatever else I do, if I can help people achieve little that'd be like time worth spending. So that's kind of, I guess, some of the early thoughts, but we'll see. I think in 3 to 6 months, I'll know. I'm still exploring is what I will say, but those are some of the things I'm excited about at this stage.
SaaS Stories is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink enables high-quality interactions between buyers and sellers through presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create personalized sales presentations and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversation. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 990-216-3132. That is 990-216-3132.
Wonderful, Ravi. Thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed this chat. This is very insightful, actually. I think folks who listen to this will carry back a lot, and there is a lot of actionable ideas here. And you have been very frank, although you said you will not mention numbers. I think you have been pretty generous about giving pointers. So all told, I think this is a great, great talk, and I look forward to what you do in 6 months' time.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Thanks. Thanks for having me. Let's stay in touch.
Coming up in the next episode is another in-depth data-rich conversation with Jagat Iyer, founder Vitphone.
We are secure by design, and I think that's very important. I think the days of downloading an application or a client should have been long gone. We're all SaaS founders here, and I think we should understand that SaaS itself means no download. It's off the browser. And secure by design, I mean that it's not about what encryption we use in our conferencing technology. It's really about what are our founding principles around which we build this. Do we value privacy at a very fundamental level? Do we value ethics at a very fundamental level? And we take a high ground here, though the technology is not easy. Like if you look at, for example, a Skype, or you look at a Zoom, or even a Meet today, you may click on a link, but they're always forcing you to download a client onto your local desktop. And they do that so that they can obviously get a lot more access into your system, optimize the performance. But it comes at a significant risk. But we build this around secure by design as a big philosophy. And the reason is that we need to open this up to external communications. And what I mean by that is that still on let's say I can only if I'm on Zoom, I can call you on Zoom. Only if I'm on Meet, I can call you on Meet. That's still a problem today. That's not changed. Bitphone, we are still the only people who don't need to download anything. Click a button, you're in.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations featuring Tal Mor, founder Eventplace, the virtual event platform from Israel, and many more. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today and listening to this episode of SaaS Stories. This is where I speak with the dreamers and visionaries who dared to think ahead and built world-class SaaS products. We hope this conversation helped you with the insights that you can go and apply right now to your own SaaS journey. We hope to have you here with us again in the next episode of SaaS Stories. SaaS Stories is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. SaaS Insider, the definitive community for global SaaS, and is a BizCast original production.